This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
A bounce up, but for how long?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. After yesterday's plunge into the 6,700s, the Dow is getting a bump this morning. European markets have turned mostly higher as well. We have seen little bounces before after a big plunge, but so far in this downturn, those bounces have not stopped the market from continuing to then drop even further. Andrew Hilton is director of the Center for the Study of Financial Innovation in London. Andrew, what went through your mind yesterday as Wall Street fell so low?
Fear, I suppose. Fear that there is really no bottom at the present time, that we're being pushed by a sort of irrational desire to sell rather than we're beyond rational analysis. We're into an area which is kind of really rather scary.
So what are world markets looking for?
I suppose they're looking for a bright light in the east and an angel to appear and to be told that really, you know, God is going to intervene and everything's going to be better. At the moment, short of divine intervention, it's hard to know what's going to stop this.
Wow. That's our only hope, huh?
Well, of course that's irrational, but yes, it's our only hope. I'm not looking for any fact, any sort of tangible change which is going to change sentiment. It seems to me that one does need some sort of exogenous and unexpected factor that's going to break this pervasive sense that the markets only have one way to go and that's down. Now, it could well be a sudden turnaround in demand for, let's say, automobiles or indeed for housing. And, you know, the retail figures have not been as bad as people expected because discounting is starting to have an impact. But that isn't enough by itself yet to do it. But maybe there will come a month when General Motors sales, instead of being down 46% year on year, will actually, you know, be flat or something like that. And there'll be a story in the Wall Street Journal or somewhere else which will say, you know, the automobile industry has now bottomed out. And for some reason, people will believe it. But, you know, that almost requires divine intervention.
The Wall Street Journal reports this morning that the Obama administration is considering creating these multiple privately run investment funds to buy toxic assets, and the government would contribute money into those funds. Any reaction?
Well, if the government is prepared to put enough money into them, obviously they're a good buy. If the government is not prepared to put a great deal of money into them, private investors will shy away from them. You know, private investors aren't stupid. If they can get a government subsidy to take these toxic assets off the banks, they'll do it. People can always find a way to make a buck if the government is going to underwrite their losses.
Sounds like you think the private aspect of this is a bit of a sheen.
I think the private aspect is a bit of a con, yeah. I think that the government is looking for a private sector fig leaf to cover up what's really a public sector bailout.
Andrew Hilton, director of the Center for the Study of Financial Innovation, thank you.
My pleasure.
The Dow is up 58 points, or 0.8%. So far, the NASDAQ down 1%, or 14 points. The S&P 500 also down 1% or so, down 8 points. European markets have mostly recovered their earlier losses. An exception is London's FTSE 100, still down sharply. Asian markets ended lower again. Wall Street looks to Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner for some guidance today. He'll give an update on plans to shore up the financial system. Also speaking today, Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke, who's testifying to Congress on the direction of this economy. The Federal Reserve today launches its much-awaited program to boost the availability of credit to consumers and small businesses. The Fed will lend up to $200 billion to spur consumer lending for autos, education, and credit cards. At the same time, Citigroup is offering some assistance. Just days after its third government bailout, Citi this morning announced a new program to help jobless homeowners. Marketplace's Dan Gretsch has that.
Citigroup will lower mortgage payments for people who are unemployed and have stopped making payments on their house. Those borrowers would pay an average of $500 a month. That's about a third of a typical payment for mortgages that would qualify for the plan.
You know, when people lose their jobs, they don't have to lose their homes.
That's Sanjeev Das, CEO of Citi Mortgage. The plan is only a temporary reprieve, just 3 months, and it only applies to mortgages owned and serviced by Citi Mortgage. But Das says it's the first program of its kind in the country, and it will help thousands of people.
The more we can keep borrowers in their homes, and the more we can help borrowers stay current with their mortgage as we go through this economic cycle, we will all come out in the right place.
Citigroup received $25 billion in emergency funds last week and is now one-third owned by U.S. taxpayers. But Das says the unemployed homeowner program is an idea that was hatched without government pressure. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Tuesday, March 3rd at Marketplace.org. Do you feel as though you've been run over by your credit card lately? Have you invested with a firm that goes by the name Madoff or Stanford? Have you been shocked by your home's interest rate? Well, then the Senate Banking Committee is taking up your case today. Jennifer Collins reports.
The committee wants to revamp our country's regulatory system so it better serves you. Senator Chris Dodd chairs the banking committee. He's introduced legislation to protect credit card users against things like retroactive interest rate hikes and sudden changes to their terms. Steve Bartlett's with the Financial Services Roundtable. He says gaps in credit card regulation are characteristic of our entire system.
We right now have a regulatory structure that is a series of pillars with nothing in between, so we have to close those gaps so that the entire system is connected.
Bartlett says the government also needs legislation to better protect investors and homebuyers. He rejects criticism that an efficient market requires less regulation.
So a better financial system and consumer protection go hand in hand. They're not at odds.
Bartlett says he'd like to see regulation that's consistent across every state. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
Okay, take a guess. Which American city has the most energy-efficient buildings? The EPA is stirring up a little competition today with the release of its rankings for the top 10 cities. As Sarah Gardner reports from the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, if you want to win this contest, it helps to have miles and miles of buildings in the first place.
The EPA ranked cities according to how many of its commercial buildings have earned the agency's Energy Star label. Think good housekeeping seal of approval for energy efficiency. Los Angeles takes the prize with 262. It's true, LA is big and sprawling, but it's not just a matter of numbers. The EPA's Maura Beard credits California policy, like a law requiring building owners to publicly report their yearly energy consumption.
By paying attention to how much energy they use, it makes sense that it's landing LA and San Francisco on the top of this list.
San Francisco ranks second, Houston, D.C., and Dallas follow. Beard says California and Texas may be more energy conscious because of growing populations. The EPA estimates the 6,200 Energy Star buildings in this country have saved over $1 billion on their utility bills. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
Perhaps nobody knows better just how bad the car business is than dealerships. But some dealers are finding that the used car business is helping them get through this economic slump. Here's David Chong.
Carbon fiber, got the mini battery. It's got a 2.4.
Luis Rodriguez is shopping for cars.
What's the asking price?
But he's not looking at any shiny new models. He thinks he'll get more value with something slightly used.
I don't like buying brand new just because of the price itself, you know. You know, if you're buying mildly used, you already, somebody already took the hit for it, you know, the depreciation money.
New car sales are on a dramatic downward slide, from around 16 million in 2007 to about 13 million in 2008. And it looks like things will get worse before they get better. With fewer people looking for new cars, dealers are depending on customers like Rodriguez to help them get through this slump. Don Herring Jr. owns 3 Mitsubishi dealerships in the Dallas metro area.
In 2001, we sold almost 10 new cars to every used car, and now we're selling 3 to 4 used cars to every new car. So the market has changed towards used cars like the rest of the country.
Herring says he's devoting more space on his lot for used cars. In fact, he's sending buyers out to auctions 3 times a week to snap up more of them. There just aren't enough trade-ins to keep up with demand. And he says he often can make more profit per used car sale than with new cars.
Used cars are still unique. It's probably the only one exactly like that, with that exact condition, those exact miles. And so it makes it a little bit more of a true market, a true free market.
Compare that with new cars. Herring says he's stuck with about a 2% profit margin, and that's when the economy is good. But used car sales won't save all dealerships. The problem remains with new cars. Sales are expected to drop to around 10 million this year. Sampac owns 3-4 dealerships in Dallas.
If the industry stays at 10 million, we have major issues facing us. And those major issues would be too many manufacturers and too many dealers.
Pack says some dealerships will close, but he believes his experience and Texan's love affair with cars will keep his business running. In Dallas, I'm David Chong for Marketplace.
There's likely to be more bad news out of Detroit today. U.S. automakers released their sales figures from last month. Analysts expect February's totals to drop below even January's numbers, and those were the worst in almost 30 years. Faced with one of the weakest economies in the country, companies in Michigan are no stranger to bad news. In fact, the state's Chamber of Commerce has sponsored a series of seminars to help companies deliver that news to their employees. From Michigan Radio, Dustin Dwyer reports.
Rick Camel has been a public relations consultant in Michigan for over a decade. It's been a decade of some very bad news. Here's how Camel describes his job.
I kind of do the same thing that Wonder Bra does. I don't change anything, I just reposition it so it looks better.
Camel is speaking in a small classroom at Walsh College, about 30 miles outside of Detroit. It says something about the Michigan economy that only about a dozen people showed up for this seminar. Many big companies here already have plenty of experience delivering bad news. Camel is here to help smaller ones who may be new to it. He rolls through a series of tips for how to announce layoffs. One tip, avoid cliches like, we are a family.
You know what? We're not family. You're an employer. I'm an employee. That's okay. But you wouldn't lay off or fire your mom. Okay?
Camel also deconstructs the media a bit. He says reporters like me will cast companies in one of four roles: expert, rescuer, villain, or victim.
And sometimes you can play the victim. Sometimes I've positioned my, well, due to cutbacks, we're unable to. Or because the federal government's, you know, changed the rule, we aren't able to provide.
If that sounds a little manipulative, well, that's PR for you. But learning to massage the message can help companies, and not just with getting better press coverage. Patrick DeMay runs a small steel fabrication business in Michigan. He's cut his workforce before.
I hate to look at a guy and lay him off.
After going through the bad news seminar, though, DeMay says he's got some new ideas.
The thing I got out of this was putting that positive spin on it, letting them know, and also letting them know the truth, where everything sits. Why is it that they're getting laid off?
Of course, no matter how he spins or explains it, those people will still be out of a job. DeMay says his goal is to not make anyone angry. So when things turn around and he's hiring again, they'll come back. In Ann Arbor, Michigan, I'm Dustin Dwyer for Marketplace.
We've heard a lot in recent months about magazines shutting down. So what's Reader's Digest doing launching publications? It puts out a new title, Fresh Home, this week, aimed at the young and thrifty. And then a health and wellness publication called Best You kicks off in a few weeks. It might sound like a gamble these days, but as Ashley Milne-Tite reports, Reader's Digest might not have a choice.
Reader's Digest has about $2 billion in debt. Ratings agencies like Standard & Poor's say it's getting harder for the company to pay it back. Still, S&P's Hal Diamond says chasing new readers makes sense.
The core business in the past contributed the lion's share of profits, and now that that core business is in a steady decline.
With the economy in the dumps, it may seem an odd time to launch new magazines. Robert Boynton is a journalism professor at New York University. He says Fortune magazine launched the year after the 1929 Wall Street crash, and it takes years for a magazine to make money anyway.
All the people who start building when the boom is well in evidence probably have actually missed the great time to break into the market. The great time to break into the market is oftentimes when things look worse.
Boynton says the glossies are losing readers exhausted by the pursuit of the perfect lifestyle. Reader's Digest's more down-to-earth offerings, he says, could be just what they're looking for. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
We're just a few weeks into President Obama's near $800 billion stimulus package. And starting today, federal agencies have to disclose how they're spending their share of the money. The Office of Management and Budget wants weekly online reports. From Washington, Ronnie Radbill has more.
Visitors will find the weekly spending plans on recovery.gov. In their initial reports, agencies must state how much Congress gave them, how they'll spend the money, and any action they've already taken. More detailed plans are required in May. Rob Neighbors is Deputy Director of the Office of Management and Budget. He says OMB is assigning 470 staffers to this effort.
That weekly report will become the basis by which OMB, the White House, and Congress conduct our oversight responsibilities with regard to the agencies.
Jamie Court, president of Consumer Watchdog, calls the online updates an unprecedented experiment.
This is, I think, the first time government is held accountable in any accessible way for the public.
He adds the online transparency could give taxpayers more confidence in how stimulus money is being spent and so boost their willingness to spend their own. In Washington, I'm Ronnie Radbill for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke. The Dow has come up 66 points this morning at 6829. These days, that makes for a 1% gain. Have a great Tuesday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.